Hello and welcome to Banking Matters. I'm your host, Roger Morris, and today I'm pleased to be welcomed on by my other co-hosts here. So first we have Lindsay Hughley. I'm sure everyone saw her interview last week with Becca Hurst. It was great. And I'm also pleased to welcome on making her podcast debut, Julia Gutierrez. So I figured we could start off here by just getting to know each other a little bit. I mean, this is the first of the month podcast that we've done together as a group. So let's let the audience get to know you guys.
So I'm Lindsay Hughley. Like Roger said, I am been with Compliance Alliance for a year and a half now, and I live in West Tennessee. I've been in banking since 2010, and I love BSA. I'm very passionate about it, and I'm the mom of three wild little boys, and they keep me extremely busy when I'm not working.
And I'm Julia Gutierrez. I live in North Carolina. I've got two little boys. They're 13 and one just turned 9. So they keep me busy with all their sports and extracurricular activities. I've been in banking for a little over 20 years. I've spent most of that time on the compliance side of things. I've been working for consulting firms for the last 9 years. And I've been at Compliance Alliance for about 5. I'm the vice president of compliance education. So I help out with a lot of things like our webinars. I go out and do outside training, just things like that. So I really enjoy that. I enjoy getting to meet new folks, talking to bankers from across the country, getting their insight, hearing their issues, concerns, things like that, as it relates to compliance. So it's something I really enjoy.
Okay, so I'm sure anyone who's familiar with our education offerings, like you said, is very familiar with who Julia is. So I'm excited to see you get out there and interview a few people and get on the podcast. All right. Well, there's been a bit of news since the last time we did a recording. I wanted to dive into that first. So there was a pretty big Supreme Court ruling a couple weeks ago now, and that was deciding the CFPB's funding, whether or not it was constitutional or unconstitutional. So a little bit of background, anyone who's familiar with the CFPB and the rules they've put out recently, particularly 1071, that's the one we always get asked about on Hotline. There were injunctions in those cases, putting implementation on hold while the Supreme Court, well, we all eagerly awaited the Supreme Court's decision on whether or not their funding was constitutional. Well, the Supreme Court has ruled that it is, and not to get too much into the weeds and the legalese, they have ruled that it does not violate the Appropriations Clause of the U.S. Constitution. So what that means is that those rulemakings are essentially all back on track. So there were delays in the CFPB's credit card late fee rule, the payday loan rule. They had made updates to the UDAC exam manual for implementing fair banking principles into UDAP. And the big one, like I said, 1071. As of the moment, those court cases are all just back on track. There are no delays at this time. The CFPB has made a couple of comments, most notably for 1071. They have put implementation back on track, but delayed it by 290 days. So where did they get 290 days? That's the date from when the injunction was put in place until the Supreme Court reached a ruling. So the CFPB has put out a chart that shows their compliance date. Essentially, you look there, look at whatever tier you were originally for implementation, and they pushed it back by 290 days. So don't delay on 1071 any longer if you had already. We would warn you not to do that. But for all intents and purposes, now proceed as usual. There are still future legal challenges to it that could, emphasize, could delay it further. Now that the constitutional issues are out of the way, they're going to delay the legality of some of the specifics of the rulemakings. But those will be litigated. And if there's any news, we will talk to you.
Yeah, there's a lot of banks that are about to get really busy, and hopefully, like you said, they haven't delayed. I know with VCO standpoint, it's banks have still been asking about it, and I'm sure, especially next month, as we meet with all of our banks, they're going to be saying, okay, where are we at? What are we doing? If you haven't already been still talking about it, it's going to be busy for sure.
Well, our Hotline did not disappoint. So I think there was a Supreme Court ruling, you know, in the morning. And then I think within 90 minutes, we were already getting questions about, you know, what it means. Have you digested this 50-page ruling yet from the Supreme Court? But we're happy to get the word out there now. All right, and then I think, Julia, what did you have to talk about today?
Well, I wanted to touch on junk fees. So that ongoing campaign to sort of junk the junk fees, it continues. There's currently two proposed rules that have been issued by the CFPB, and both of those rules target what the agency deems as junk fees. One of those rules focuses on overdraft fees, while the other focuses on NSF fees. And junk fees, especially those related to overdraft and NSF, have continually remained an area that's been ripe for scrutiny among those regulatory agencies. So, you know, we always talk about kind of what got the ball rolling, you know, what really got us, you know, focused back on that and getting those NSFs and overdraft fees back into that regulatory spotlight. And, you know, I'd like to think that it kind of started a couple of years ago in 21 when the CFPB showed some research that they had, and it indicated that banks had a deep dependence on overdraft fees. And there were even statements that referenced rather than competing on quality service and attractive interest rates, that a lot of banks had become hooked on overdraft fees to feed their profit model. So around the same time, other agencies began to call for new rules and enforcement to address bank overdraft practices and recommendations for changed overdraft programs that would emphasize enhancement, supervisory, and enforcement scrutiny of banks that were heavily dependent on these types of fees. So we've seen some guidance, we've seen some warnings to financial institutions that they need to start focusing on consumer financial health and more consumer-friendly programs and to limit or at least minimize some of those junk fees that are incurred by consumers. So we take that, you know, from what we saw in 22, and we kind of fast forward to where we are today. And these agencies have certainly followed through with those warnings that they gave. There have been a few general shifts in compliance and banking in recent years, with multiple banks either eliminating overdraft fees or otherwise updating their policies to be more consumer friendly, as well as many banks eliminating those non-sufficient funds fees on consumer deposit accounts. I'd like to talk a little bit about those two proposed rules that are currently pending. So that first one was actually issued in January of this year, and the CFPB proposed that rule to close the bank overdraft loophole that's costing Americans billions each year on those junk fees. And so this proposed rule was issued in an effort to rein in that excessive overdraft fees that were charged by some of the nation's largest financial institutions. So what we're seeing with a lot of this guidance and these proposed rules is that it's really focused on larger banks. That doesn't let these smaller institutions off the hook, even based on some of that data that, you know, we've seen in 22. There was still the same concept that, you know, that was still impactful to consumers, whether you were a large financial institution or a smaller financial institution charging multiple lower NSF and overdraft type fees. Again, back to this first proposed rule, it would close an outdated loophole that exempts overdraft lending services from those longstanding provisions that we saw in the Truth in Lending Act, as well as other consumer financial protection laws. For decades, we've seen larger financial institutions be able to issue highly profitable overdraft loans, which gain them billions of dollars in revenue annually. So under this proposed rule, large banks would be free to extend overdraft loans if they complied with longstanding lending rules, including disclosing any applicable interest rate. Alternatively, the bank could charge a fee to recoup their cost at an established benchmark with a dollar amount as low as $3 or at a cost that they calculate if they're showing that cost data. So this proposed rule doesn't focus on those smaller institutions or those community-sized banks, but rather those insured financial institutions with more than $10 billion in assets. So this is going to cover approximately 175 of the nation's largest depository institutions. Over time, approximately 23 million households pay overdraft fees in any given year. So the CFPB estimates that this rule could save consumers an estimated amount of $3.5 billion or more in fees per year. So the potential savings here would translate to approximately $100 for households that pay overdraft fees each year. So the Truth in Lending loophole, I just wanted to kind of give a little background on that. In 1968, Congress enacted the Truth in Lending Act, and in 69, the Federal Reserve Board wrote rules to implement the new law. So this generally required lenders to clearly disclose the cost of credit to borrowers. Now, at that time, many families received and sent checks through the mail and had little certainty about when their deposits or when their withdrawals would clear. So when a bank clears a check and the consumer doesn't have the funds in the account, the bank is issuing a loan to cover that difference. So the Federal Reserve Board created that exemption to the Truth in Lending protections if banks were honoring checks when the depositor inadvertently overdrew their account. At this time, this was used frequently, and there was a modest cost. It wasn't a major profit driver. Of course, fast forward, and in the 1990s, early 2000, with the rise of debit cards, institutions began raising those fees. We started to see a huge increase, and they were using that exemption to churn high volumes of overdraft loans on debit card transactions, rather than using it for its intended purpose. So annual overdraft fees, started to increase, and it became a huge problem for consumers and something that, became a real focal point. So, we've seen a lot of financial institutions have some recent policy changes. They've lowered overdraft fee revenue overall to about $9 billion per year. And some of these policy changes have been followed by enforcement and supervisory efforts by the CFPB to root out some of those overdraft practices that are illegal, such as charging fees to consumers who had enough money in their account to cover the transaction at the time that the bank actually authorized it. So with this proposed rule, traditionally those overdraft fees are considered service charges rather than finance charges, meaning that they're traditionally treated as a deposit account feature rather than an extension of credit. And as a result of that, honoring an overdraft doesn't make a bank a creditor subject to Regulation Z. So Reg Z also makes clear that those debit cards are generally not credit cards, even if their use results in overdrafts. So allowing consumers to overdraw their accounts with a debit card and honoring such overdraft doesn't make a bank a card issuer subject to that Reg Z. So this proposed rule would fundamentally change that for larger financial institutions. If it's finalized in its present form, the rule would treat overdraft fees as finance charges under certain conditions. And that proposal would subject overdraft services provided by banks with over $10 billion in assets to Reg Z's disclosure provisions that apply to consumer credit cards, but only when those overdraft fees exceed the direct cost of providing the service. So a large bank's overdraft fee wouldn't be considered a finance charge, and it wouldn't trigger coverage under Reg Z if the fees didn't exclude the average direct cost and charged-off losses that are associated with providing those services. Now, you can use this proposed rule, and there's currently two ways to calculate under the proposed rule. The bank could rely on a benchmark fee that's established by the CFPB, and that proposed rule sets forth four possible benchmark fees. They're $3, $6, $7, and $14. Or the other option is that banks could calculate the fee on their own, adding together all of the direct costs, such as those direct operational costs or providing the service, and charged off losses from the previous year, and then divide the amount by the number of overdrafts that it honors in the past year for a fee that's charged. So that's, again, something that's going to apply to larger financial institutions, not necessarily applicable to smaller banks or community-sized banks, but certainly something to be aware of. Comments for that proposed rule were due by April of this year, so we just got to wait and kind of see what's going to happen with that final rule. I'm so sorry, Roger. Go ahead. I was going to just touch on that second proposed rule. In January, again, of this year, but it was the 24th, just a little bit after, the CFPB announced a proposed rule that was aimed at blocking NSF fees on debit cards, ATM, and certain peer-to-peer payment transactions that banks decline in real time. So this proposed rule would ultimately prohibit these NSF fees, deeming them unlawful as abusive practices under the UDEP provisions. So again, we've got these two proposed rules, but like I said in the beginning, this ongoing campaign to sort of junk the junk fees continues on. So we shall see where these proposed rules land in the near future. But for the time being, I do encourage financial institutions to take a look at those imposed fees that they have in place, review their overdraft programs, look at how NSF fees are implemented and any other fees at your institutions. And of course, you want to stay abreast of that regulatory landscape and how it's changing as it relates to junk fees. And of course, reach out to your Compliance Alliance team whenever you have questions. And I'm going to try
that. Yeah, I want to touch on one thing really quick, too. No, you're good. I just want to touch on one thing really quick about that, too, a follow-up question. I know a lot of the rules and these caps are targeted towards larger institutions. I mean, these rules specifically, you know, $10 billion plus. But I think it would be fair to say, too, that even for community banks, if it's just targeted at the banks at the top and they bring down fees, there's going to be market pressures and downward pressure for them to reduce their fees later on down the line, right?
Absolutely. I think that that's kind of one of those ideas is this isn't just a big bank problem, a big bank issue. It's certainly something that we want to take a look at, even at smaller institutions, because, again, you know, the research showed that while smaller institutions tended to have lower fees, the outcome for consumers, you know, was the same. They were still facing the same issues. So, yeah, I certainly think it's something that smaller banks need to take a look at and not just assume it's a big bank problem.
Gotcha. And so jumping from that into, so I am with our virtual partners area of Compliance Alliance. I'm a virtual compliance officer. And so many of the banks that I get to work with firsthand, one of the trends that we've been seeing with regulators across the board, I've personally experienced OCC and the Fed noting on this, but as far as in regards to their BSA programs, the examiners are now coming in and really wanting quantitative data to back up any risk-based decision that's being made as far as BSA. So when you're completing your BSA risk assessment, making sure that you are painting a picture with your numbers of your trends, your types of transactions, the different, any individual services that you offer, but being able to show comparative data to say, okay, this year we sent X amount of wires. This amount was international. This amount was incoming and outgoing. But being able to sit that side by side and say, okay, has there been anything really great? Because then again, you can also, whenever you're finishing just the rest of your risk assessment, you'll be able to have that supporting information. Another area that they're really digging for quantitative data is also in your high risk your high risk reviews for your customers. So really going in and again, showing how trends have changed, showing that their transaction amounts, the types have all stayed stable. Have they delved into new stuff? Are they now sending twice as many ACHs as they used to? So much of that. And again, it's been findings. I know for several in the group and what we've seen across the board. So because the BSA manual does not exactly spell out exactly what you are required to do, this is more of what the examiner's opinion and what they are looking for, but they're definitely looking for basically like your teacher always said in math, show your work. So all of the information that you can get from your core about your customers or about just the services you provide in general and being able to essentially paint a picture with your numbers, that's definitely would help as far as that goes. So it's been interesting over the last couple of months.
Well, I'm happy we have a BSA expert on here now.
And I was going to say,
not sure about the expert title, but I've just kind of slid into that role as things have moved. We've got several episodes coming up, and I am grateful to say that I was able to, the next two, I believe, are mine. We've got Frank Lazario coming up. His interview and his topic, he talked about using AI in regards to marketing and how a community bank can fully embrace AI and almost function as a robust marketing team. The points that he has, and honestly, I've been using them now since his interview in my personal life. We touch on several different ways to use AI. I've just never thought about it. So I'm really excited for everyone to hear that one. And then the next one is Dr. Gerald Taylor. He was my old supervisor several years ago. I worked under him for about 3 years, but he talks about just revamping and restructuring a compliance department. We both kind of went through that change together, but his leadership mindset and growth mindset is really just so good. And honestly, I was just so thankful to be able to interview someone. I mean, he was very special, really a great person to work under. So I'm excited for everybody to get to see those two episodes coming up.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
I know. It's going to be great. So I guess here is our first group podcast together during the summer. And so I know, Julia, you said you've got boys too. So here's to surviving the summer with everyone at home now, out of school.
Exactly. Cheers to that.
That's right. All right. So I'm Lindsay, and this is Banking Matters.